Welcome to another episode of Shakti Waves Radio with your host, Sonia Avramovic. Shakti Waves Radio broadcasts epic dives into greatness, and today I am interviewing the one, the only, Long Distance Love Bombs, also known as Jeremy, also known as Jeremy Goldberg, also known as Dr. Jeremy Goldberg. We're going to talk about what you're a doctor in, because I think it's unique and fantastic and probably one of my favorite topics in the world, and also not super related to what you do now. So that's fascinating. Jeremy is a writer, a poet, a coach. He just published a book of poetry called It'll Be Okay and You Will Be Too. It's pretty much just like a life-affirming little booklet for anyone that wants to feel good ever. I'm holding it in my hand. I had a vision of Jeremy handing it to me, and that vision just came true. And we are here in Vancouver. It is rainy. It is beautiful. We met in Bali. Andrea Balt's epic creative rehab retreat. Maybe we can talk about that a bit because I've never talked about it because I've been processing it for 10 months. So welcome. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. I love that we have no agenda at all.
No.
I'm like, oh, we're just sitting on my couch and you're going to ask me things about things. So let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay,
fabulous. So I love to give people a bit of an origin story. Like, how is it that you became an entrepreneur, a writer, that this is what you do full time? Like, where did it all start? And can we start with, like, marine biology?
Yeah. So, trying to rewind my life.
No. Did I? That noise? That was terrible.
I mean, we're doing our best, though. You know? My background is in marine science, conservation, sustainability. I worked in government and universities for a decade all around the world, in Australia and Thailand and the South Pacific, doing coral reef conservation, natural resource management, climate change, pollution, fisheries science, all kinds of dorky science stuff with the broader intention of like changing the world, saving the planet, right? That was cool. And basically one thing as I learned, the more I did that was recognizing that we don't manage the environment, we manage people. There's this phrase that like the fish will be fine without us. So we're managing their impacts on the planet. And so to do that, you have to engage people. You have to message them. You have to market to them. You have to try to manipulate them into taking action and taking the right action. So I got really invested into psychology and sociology and how we communicate and how our brains work and how our beliefs influence our behaviors. And then on the side, I started this little blog called Long Distance Love Bombs, where I was trying to make kindness cool. And I was just writing and ranting. It was kind of a bit of fun to keep me sane while I was doing a PhD. And then slowly over the years, that became much more fun and enjoyable. I realized that I wanted to do that more than I wanted to do the science. And so I had this little transition phase about 2 years ago where I left science and like said goodbye to the government job, like got the PhD, did the graduation, and was like, I'm going to go work online. And whatever the fuck that means.
The Matrix. I'm going online now.
Going on the Matrix. And then was burnt out and then did a big road trip, recharged, and was like, okay, how do I do this? And so I started coaching, started writing, I started doing online programs, teaching workshops. And here we are. The end.
That's the whole story.
That's the whole
story. Got a PhD, took a road trip, went online, and yeah. Here we are. You really make it sound super simple. And what I think is super unique about you is how transferable I think you kind of realize a lot of your skills were, like even from studying people from a psychology background and from trying to save the ocean to actually coaching individuals and groups of people to living their best life. Like, what was that transition like for you?
It's a good question. I think I did definitely recognize that there are only so many rules to life, right? And like one of the main ones is, I believe that you see the world that you choose to see. So our reality is entirely this subjective experience that goes on in our minds. Like we're having the same podcasting experience, but we'll be experiencing it in totally different ways based on our beliefs and our backgrounds and our past and how we're doing in any given moment. And so I was really fascinated with that. And I think there's real power in that once we recognize that we can take responsibility for everything that's happening in our own life and that we have the power to change that through our own conscious choices. became a really interesting phenomenon that I got curious about and started reading more about. And I've always been sort of a self-help, self-development dork too, trying to get curious and trying to see what's possible and trying to understand life and the world around me, which is basically the core tenet of science, just trying to figure shit out, conduct experiments and gather data. So then, yeah, I started taking all this stuff that I learned through the environmental field and just applying it to humans and coaching and myself, really, like trying to tease out why I do certain things, why I don't do certain things, what's limiting me, what's expanding me. And then it just sort of snowballed like down the mountain. Mm-hmm. And then people started paying to talk to me, which is like, wow, does you know this? Like, as a coach, it's like the weirdest fucking thing. They're like, yeah, you want to pay to talk to me? Most people like don't want to talk to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I meet people in public and I ask them questions. They're like, no, I'm not doing this. But you want to give me like money to talk? So that was an interesting process and still is. I think part of the entrepreneurial journey is recognizing your own worth and your own value in terms of not only what you charge, but also what you have to offer the world. And then expanding and growing through that process and continually improving while appreciating exactly where you are in any given moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is the tricky balance.
Mm-hmm.
What do you reckon?
What do you reckon? You lived in Australia for a while.
Yeah, I'm Australian.
Oh, you're actually fully Australian.
I did the swearing in thing, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a true blue fucking Australian, mate.
Perfect. You can do animal adventure time with Jeremy or cook time with Jeremy.
And
he does an Australian accent. It's quite fabulous on his Insta stories. I highly recommend.
Yeah.
What do I reckon? Well, I think it's, one, what you just said is something I've been thinking for a while is essentially we're life scientists. We're just kind of putting out hypotheses, seeing what sticks, what doesn't work, what causes what are the variables involved in life. And it's really interesting because a lot of the time, the best analogy that I have for my clients when they're going about coaching or trying to get to some end is like, cool, you want to get to this result and we're just going to keep testing until we actually get there. Or like, what is that result even going to give you? Like, what's the point of even getting it? So it's like asking the greater question of like, why even do the inquiry? So
yeah.
I really connect to that. I connect to the scientific leading into the day-to-day personal development world. That's an interesting conversation.
I think that's so important because that why is the foundation of anybody's journey. And like Simon Sinek has based his whole career on this. Like,
yeah.
What is your why? TED Talk is amazing. Book, corporation. Like he's devoted solely to helping people discover their why. And I sort of use that principle when I talk to clients as well. You want to start a business, you want to leave your relationship, you want to do all these amazing, hard, scary things, but like, why? What is it that you are actually seeking? Because we can very easily get into this trap where we think, when that happens, then I'll be happy, right? Or I need more, or all of these kind of external searches for internal acceptance or appreciation. And so I think it's really important to get clear on why you're doing the things you're doing in terms of life, but also just in terms of business, in terms of like your day. And we're mostly just chasing feelings, as you suggested. It's like, oh, I want to be happy. I want to be fulfilled. I want to feel safe. I want to feel content, etc. So I think getting to the heart of that is really important.
Mm. Heck yeah. Well, what is your why? Are you aware of it? Are you present to it?
Yeah, it's funny. I keep changing big values, right? So for years, I was really fascinated with this idea of just gratitude.
Mm.
Like if I'm grateful, then I win because, you know, I win the game of life.
That's fabulous.
If like something terrible happens and I recognize that it's growing me or it's an opportunity to learn, if I can appreciate everything in the moment, then like I felt like I win, right? And I got really fascinated with perspective of like having a really big picture. You know, on the big cosmic scale, we're all irrelevant. We're all going to die. And like, we're all on Earth and we're zooming through a fucking space system around a ball of fire. And like half the world's upside down, but they don't even feel it. And like, what the fuck is even life? Like, why would I get upset that I burnt my tea or whatever? You know what I mean? Like, eh. So anyway,
perspective.
I'm a fan of tangents, actually. My greater why is helping people to live their best lives and helping myself to have those epiphany moments. You're like, oh, I get it. And helping people to understand that they are entirely in control of any outcome that they see. And that's so exciting to me because I deeply believe that the world needs more of us living in that way. And that the only way that we're going to solve or address all this darkness and this muck and this crap that's going on is for us individually and collectively to live in our light and find our own why for being here and to do that to the best of our abilities. And so I get really excited about that. Like you know, helping people, like coaching people, it's so fun. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Like people, like they give you money to talk to you, which is weird enough in itself. But then they send you like the most heartwarming, heartbreaking messages of gratitude. It's like, hey, take my money, talk to me, and I'm going to make you feel so good about that. It's just the weirdest profession. I can't even explain it, how weird it is that I get to do that. And like, to me, I'm just like eternally grateful for the internet and for my voice, like all these random things. So anyway, this is a bit of a rambling, incoherent statement.
Mm.
My why is to help people get where they want to go. My why is to make shit happen, do good shit, get shit done, like in the best way possible.
Mm.
Yeah, I should probably let you talk now because I'm just rambling. I need a soapbox.
You got your soapbox. It's your couch.
Yeah, it is my couch, actually.
You know what? I literally just opened your book before we started this, and the exact poem I opened it to was get shit done, do good shit.
Yeah.
Like it was that poem, and you just quoted that. So, I mean, like life imitates art, imitates life, right? Sometimes you need your own words, or you are your own art. So, I mentioned to you in Bali that one of the things that I see you doing best is taking huge, big concepts. Like you love thinking about all of these things. And then you kind of whittle it down. You're like, oh, gratitude. That's it. Like all of it could kind of come down to gratitude. And when you have gratitude, you win. And when I hear you saying like people living their best life, getting shit done, doing good shit, it kind of seems like all of it, you get to have gratitude.
Yeah.
And then when people give you, like I heard you mention again, I can't believe I get to get paid to talk to people. And then they send me gratitude from both their heartbreak and their breakthroughs, etc. And I totally know what you mean by that. It's like the most human job in the world. We get to talk to people about what matters most to them. For some people, they don't talk about anybody with, even with themselves.
Totally.
They're like, I wasn't willing to admit this to myself.
Yeah.
And we're talking about it. Now I have a person holding me accountable to the fact that I said that that's what I truly deeply want. So it's a powerful profession in terms of like, for lack of better phrasing, like waking people up and having them be accountable to like be somewhere.
Yeah. And I think too that it's almost like a reflection of my own inner stuff, right? Like I love working, having those epiphany moments. Like, oh, I'm better than I used to be. Or, oh, I know that. And now I can't unknow that. Or, oh, I just learned this really amazing. Like I'm always that guy that's like texting friends or emailing friends. Like, hey, read this. Like,
yeah.
Check this TED Talk out. Watch this thing. Like, whoa, whoa,
whoa.
Oh my God, whoa. Right. And so for me, like my why corresponds to like this scavenger hunt or treasure hunt, right? Where I'm just searching for things that light me up inside. And the things that light me up is like breakthrough or an insight or a new bit of knowledge or helping somebody to do that as well. Like seeing that in other people is so exciting to me because I see that in my own life. Like I love those feelings. And so being able to give those or helping other people to have those feelings is so fun. So fun. And for any other profession, it might be different kinds of scavenger hunts, right? Like some people love accounting and spreadsheets and order, right? And like, that's cool. Then they should be finding their treasures there, you know, making something organized from the chaos or whatever. So we all have our own individual quests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the game of life is just to discover what it is for you individually and recognizing that like your heart can change its mind and that dreams change and that's totally okay. One of my biggest dreams used to be a university professor and like do science and get big grants to snorkel on the reef and do all the things. And now I'm like, nah, I don't want that at all. That sounds gross. You know, like the dreams I used to have, are totally like gross to me now because I have new dreams. And that's right. So weird and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think oftentimes we can get sucked into those stories and get really attached to those old stories and feel bad when we change or when we want to change, whether that's ending a relationship or leaving a job or starting a business or moving to a different place. Like, it's the death of an old story, which is really uncomfortable, and stepping into the uncertainty and the unknown, which is also really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to like do the hard things and get comfortable being uncomfortable. So that I don't know, that's a whole other topic, but yeah, that's kind of why.
Mm. Well, you say so much and it's so beautiful. Let's talk about you and your various goals and the fact that you've changed some of your goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, both life coach and writer and then poet. How do all of those fit together, these different facets of you?
Yeah, I have no idea. So I'm not actually a big fan of goals. So I have an online program called Get Shit Done 101. Oh, wait, you taught my workshop.
I taught it.
Yeah, I'm stuttering. It's getting awkward.
I taught your workshop.
We've been drinking tequila, everybody. No, we haven't. You took my workshop.
Yeah.
But so in the workshop, I had this idea that goals are great and they're beautiful and they're fun and they can be smart goals if you work for government, like specific, measurable, achievable results and time bound and all that shit. However, the best goal will not get you to live that life that you need to live in order to obtain or accomplish that goal. And so the alternative is rituals or habits, whatever word you want to use. Like, mm-hmm. I used habits for a long time. And then a friend of mine is like, no, that's too harsh. Women don't like that word. Use rituals. And I was like, okay, cool. Habits. Well, yeah, we'll use rituals then. And so what I mean by that is if your goal is to write a 300-page book by the end of the year, amazing, specific. It's great to have that, but that's not going to get it done. The book's not going to get written because of the specificity of the goal. And so a ritual might be to write every day, be a writer, right? And so the idea is if your ritual is every morning when I wake up, I spend an hour writing my book, then that inevitably is going to accomplish your goal. Like, of course you're going to write a book because you write for an hour every day.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the goals are not as important as the feelings and the day-to-day activities and rituals that I'm undertaking. And I'm also conscious that like I changed my whole dream. So for me, like a 5-year plan sounds crazy because I did that. And like after a year, it became totally irrelevant because of life. I'm like, oh, well, shit, that's weird. So for me, it's like goals are to focus on trajectory instead of results is another idea. Long-term trajectory. Am I better than I was last year? Am I better than I was last month? Like, am I 1% better than I was yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, am I making X amount of dollars? Do I own the car? Do I have a wife? Whatever. That's not to say that you shouldn't have direction with where you're going and pursuing your values and pursuing things that really light you up. But for me, it's more like, am I content? Am I fulfilled? Am I doing work I'm proud of? You know, a bit broader.
Mm.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I'm following.
Okay.
So I just recorded a podcast with Eric Tremundi, and he's all about action orientation. He's so fascinating. He, right out of university, did business school together. He became an author and a speaker about rethinking work and how people work, why they work, et cetera, how that goes and how workplace culture goes. And essentially through speaking on over 200 stages, he learned and is very aware in his body and in his mind what a lot of like great sages and spiritual teachers have been teaching without reading those same books. So essentially through the process of actually being in action and just learning to communicate well and expressing himself and having big ideas and conversations, he came to a lot of these same conclusions that you could like pick up a book from Eckhart Tolle or Wayne Dyer or Marianne Williamson and get the same conclusions from. It's really interesting that like action orientation, like creating those habits and rituals, like and actually taking on the action, like writing makes you a writer, not having a goal of writing a book.
Mm.
It's really interesting. Like, it's a topic that's been coming up a lot more, especially in the space of coaching for myself personally, like in my practice and for myself, is I'm becoming much less oriented around the results, especially specific measurable results, and more so making them like these big like globs. Like, it's like these globs of how I want to feel, my values. Like, typically if I'm just creating, if I feel fully expressed and I'm creating, and whether that's a podcast or poetry or all of the above, then that's my measure of success. Mm. What I really have to look at is, like, am I in those actions, and what's stopping me from doing those actions? So I really do resonate with what you're talking about. And what I'm curious about right now is, like, what actually got you into the action of writing and writing this book? It'll be okay, and you will be too.
I love what you were just saying too. I think it's so powerful to be cautious of how we define things. Mm. So success, for example, success can be defined individually in any number of ways. Using an example from a recent chat I had with somebody is they wanted to ask a person out on a date. And so that's a good vulnerable, uncertain thing. And oftentimes we'll define success in terms of, like, did they say yes or did they say no? Like, did you get rejected? Or did you get the thing you wanted, right? But what I was suggesting was, what if you redefine success, not you, but this person, if they redefine success in terms of, did you ask them out or not? Mm-hmm. Like, did you do the hard, scary thing or did you not? And then the outcome becomes irrelevant, because what we were really trying to get at was that their identity shifted to somebody who did the hard, scary thing.
Yeah.
Rather than some external validation of who they are in any given moment. And so I think that's a really powerful thing. But then your question around how I got to where I am is, more and more I've been focusing on trying to, like, get still and listen to my heart. Like, this idea that your heart whispers and, like, fear shouts, I love. So, like, your heart is just like, right? Guess what? I have a great idea.
ASMR.
You should do this really crazy thing that you've never done before. And then my brain's like, shut the fuck up, heart. We can't do that. We don't know how to do that. We're not good enough. No one will ever buy that. That's impossible.
Yeah.
And then the next day the heart's like, psst, hey, you're right? And so we all have these little callings or these little intuitions or whatever you want to call it. So more and more I've been trying to give voice to those whispers. And I've found that action is a huge part of that, like you were just saying. Like, you learn by doing. And then just chasing the edge of my life. It's like, what feels scary? I use that as, like, a guidepost. Like, oh, that feels hard and scary and uncomfortable? Then I definitely have to do that. Mm-hmm. Rather than definitely have to avoid that. It's almost like I chase discomfort. Literally, I do that. Like, every morning I do, at the end of my shower, like, a cold water.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible, horrible.
Yeah, same here.
Ugh, it sucks. Yeah. But, like, I do it every day. And I'm now identify myself as somebody that can do hard things. And, like, consciously put myself in a position to be uncomfortable. And there's so much power in that. And so for me, it's like the goals are just to be staying on my edge. And I feel like if I keep doing that, then I keep learning and I keep growing and I keep challenging my limiting beliefs. I keep trying new things. I meet new people. And that to me is like life. That feels alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book just came about because I was writing for years and had a bunch of words, and then opportunities presented themselves. And I was like, yeah, I want to make a book. Sounds fucking rad. I've always wanted to make a book.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then now I did. I'm like, well, it's great. Look at it. And I can, like, hand it to my friends. I'm like, hey, check it out. I wrote this freaking cool book. But so I just
changed.
Yeah, check it. Look at it. It's my name on the front. It's my real name. For me, it's just like a journey. Enjoy the journey and keep an eye out for things that are big and shiny, that make your eyes widen and that make your heart beat a little bit faster, and get curious about why that is and if you could or should be pursuing those things. Really. Mm.
Oh, so quotable. Like, giving a voice to the whisper of your heart. Boom. That's, like, reminds me of Matthew McConaughey from the big, what movie? That terrible, terrible movie with Leo DiCaprio. I've, like, tried to cut it out from my existence that I even watched that movie, Wolf of Wall Street.
How's that going?
Like, obviously, it's, like, very readily available.
Oh, and they're at lunch together?
They're at lunch and they're, like, pounding their chest. That's how I feel about voicing the whispers of my heart.
Yeah, I said to a client the other day, like, we need to give your heart a soapbox.
Mm.
We need to give your heart a microphone. And we can focus on that. And then the fears and all the other internal anxieties will go down because your heart is shouting longer and more often. And you can pay more attention to that. And it's such a skill, right? It's a powerful daily practice.
Oh, holy shit. Well, isn't that what poetry is? Like, to me, immediately, I think, like, hard on a soapbox, that is just poetry. And it can look so many different ways. Like, someone could express their heart in a soapbox by designing a piece of clothing or raising a child in a particular way. That's just a fascinating idea that I'm going to, like, let people simmer over. Like, what would your heart say on a soapbox? Like, what's there right now for you that you want to shout from the rooftops? Like, send Jeremy and I, like, a little Insta message at Long Distance Love Bombs or at Sanya, S-A-N-J-A. Yes, I did get a one-name Instagram handle. That's what happens when you get on Instagram the first 2 months that it's on and you don't know it's going to blow up and become the main thing that you focus your whole life around.
That's dope.
Yeah. So many places I want to go. But one thing that really stuck out for me, and it's just a big conversation that I've been having a lot lately and I know is important to you. And when you talk about living on your edge and consciously going towards a thing that scares you, being in the discomfort and having that practice of being someone that does hard things and that feels like alive to you, that is just quintessentially what David Deida talks about in The Way of the Superior Man, like in divine masculinity, like living on the edge. That is like the ultimate masculine manifestation. Masculinity.
In general?
Okay.
Oh, God. So I'm actually doing a podcast in an hour where I'm the host.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the topic, modern masculinity.
Bam.
So, oh gosh, this is a Pandora's box. So years ago, I wrote an article about the need for a modern mansformation. Get it? Like a man transformation.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of that. You know, it's just, that's getting started. But that's all to say, I think one of the most dangerous things going on today is just toxic masculinity and this bullshit, nonsensical idea of what it means to be a man. I've written spoken word poetry about this too and presented that at a talk, this idea that to be a man is like, I hate poetry, love football, boobs are great, you know, smoke unfiltered cigarettes, I don't talk about my feelings, like, I could change the oil in my car. Like, yeah, bro, fuck yeah. And it's like, great. And my version of that would be that it's really strong to share weakness. That vulnerability, I think, is one of the biggest, bravest things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So my take is that, like, masculinity is about sort of creating that safety in the world and creating that trust and showing up in your best way to be who you truly are. I see that as real power of being okay crying, for example, and being okay speaking your truth, of chasing your dreams, of having the uncomfortable conversation, of asking for help. And I think that there's so many ongoing societal issues right now that are caused by this lack of self-love, a lack of connection, a lack of support, a lack of living truly how we are designed to be, which is to say expressive and emotional, feelings-based. So I think there's a lot of fundamental problems with this idea of masculinity today. And I'm speaking out more and more against that view and trying to spread a new message of compassion and kindness and vulnerability. And a lot of the work that I'm doing online is conscious of that. Like, I'm a dude and I have love in my brand name and there's a big red fucking heart in my logo. Posted pictures of myself crying and I write poetry and I talk about love and fear and all these other things. And like, that's okay. And my experience with that is women love that shit.
Yeah.
Like, on a selfish level, you know, it's like, hey, you know, they're drawn to that. And I think it's just a fundamental human thing of when you see people sharing their heart, you lean in. And that's how real connection is formed.
Mm-hmm.
When you're really expressing your heart, when you really are sharing what's going on inside of you, we feel like that vulnerability will push people away. And in fact, the exact opposite is true. When you are being vulnerable and open and honest with people, it brings them closer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions that we have today around masculinity.
Here it is, everybody.
Yeah.
Big-hearted man. I mean, absolutely.
We need that. What's the alternative? To continue having war and genocide and rape and like terrible marriages and divorces and all this shit. Suicide, mm-hmm. male suicide, mental illness, like all of this stuff, I think is caused at some level, at the root of it, by people not expressing how they really feel, not feeling comfortable asking for help, not having the support or community around to do so. Mm-hmm. And like doing more of the same shit that has led us to this place is not going to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We all know this.
Yeah.
And so I'm just offering one possible alternative, which is, what if we just talk about our feelings? Like, what if we just be cool with each other? Which is, to me, what like kindness is about.
Mm-hmm.
My brand is Make Kindness Cool. It's like, hey, we're all in this together. I've struggled also. I've been heartbroken also. I've lost people I loved. I've done terrible things. I've regretted a significant amount of things. I have shame. So does everybody else. Like, we're not all that different. Mm. And I think trying to pretend otherwise is a terrible idea.
All I hear is just a really human conversation. Because what I hear in that is, before you were talking about action, getting things done, being on your edge, living on the edge, which again sounds very masculine, and then the feeling, expression, vulnerability, flowing, putting your heart on the soapbox, quintessentially kind of more feminine. And you just represent both. And I think both is really just human. And all of it being allowed. Like, you can be a really productive person and also be sharing your heart with the world. You don't have to have the trade-off, is what I'm hearing. And you're just like the perfect embodiment of that.
Thank you. I'm far from perfect, but I appreciate your compliment.
Like, yeah. In process, right?
But yeah, we can be all the things. And so, for example, what if vulnerability wasn't hard? Like, that's just a social and cultural norm that's been established through centuries. Like, what if being honest was just normal?
Mm-hmm.
What if being vulnerable was just totally common? Like, what if kindness and compassion and empathy were just how we lived as a human society?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are all choices that have been made. And so my argument is, like, let's reconsider radically how we're living and how we're treating each other,
mm-hmm.
and see if there are other alternatives that can help us live better.
Mm. Like, I just want to say, like, amen, hallelujah, I agree. And what I have to add to it, if I can be vulnerable and real and honest, is it's taken me a lot of honesty to look at all of this, like to look at both masculinity and femininity and really look at the parts of it I didn't want to look at or I didn't want to admit or be with. Like, I had to admit that there was actually things about men, male culture that I hated in order to be able to consider what I actually love. Or grow what I love about men and masculinity in general. Not that masculinity has to be about men, like women also have masculine properties, like anything has masculine and feminine properties. So recently what I discovered while I was reading David Deda's book in the last couple months was, and that's The Way of the Superior Man, as I mentioned before, was that I actually had more negative feelings towards, I haven't labeled it yet, but it's something like feral femininity, or just like femininity, like also in the toxic sense, like when feminine becomes toxic. And I had more negative connotation to like too much emotion that literally goes nowhere and just becomes like depression and anxiety and terror, more than I even had like negative connotation to like action that is destructive, such as war. And of course, both of them are extremely bad, but I noticed within me, like I could be more okay with my anger than I could be with my like deep sadness or my emotions coming up and being expressed. And that was just like truth for me. And that's been one of my practices, is actually allowing myself to be with my emotions and to see them as valuable. Because what I noticed is, wow, like people generally in society, what is masculine in terms of like producing results, having action, is considered valuable. And what is feminine, which is more emotional, is very subjective. Like, art is considered feminine, right? It's emotionally based. And like, it can literally be worthless, or it can be worth millions of dollars. And people decide, and it's kind of an argument, and it's an esoteric conversation. And it's like the value is unknown, or it's a little bit less clear. And what I noticed within myself is I actually had to check in and like decide that my emotions had value and had like value to be expressed just for me. And that's been really interesting. Like, it's been a fascinating deep dive in terms of like crying and emotions and anger and sadness and regret, etc. And it's been powerful. It gives me access to a lot of creative power. What do you hear in that for yourself or just in general?
I think there's this idea that certain emotions are bad or that certain feelings are negative, right? And I think that part of the anxiety or part of the problem around feelings is that we judge the feelings instead of just feel the feelings. What I mean by that is if you're feeling sad for whatever reason, like I was in line for the taco shop the other day and I got this wave of like sorrow, deep sorrow. And I stood there and was like, what the fuck is this? I was like literally reading the taco menu. Like, oh, should I get that one or what? And it's like, whoosh, grief. I'm like, oh my God, what? The option was to really feel it and just be there. You're like, okay. And then, you know, like a cloud in the sky, it just passes. But another option would be, I'm such an idiot. Why do I feel this way? I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to feel grief. This is dumb. This is bad timing, right? And so what I mean by that is we have a tendency sometimes to judge the feelings or to judge ourselves for feeling the things. And we think that that's a practical, reasonable approach to deal with it. But it doesn't make the feelings go away.
Mm-hmm.
It just piles on a whole bunch of crap on top of it,
mm-hmm.
right? And so not only are you feeling sad, but now you're feeling shame for feeling sad. It's like a bonus package of suck, right? You can trademark that one. Hashtag.
Bonus package of suck. That sounds terrible out of context.
You can call the podcast that. You know, so the idea is there are no bad feelings. And that if it's coming up, it's coming out. Just get it up, get it out. And then it creates space where that emotion was, where that feeling was. Like if you're sad, feel sad. Cry it out. Awesome. We talked before the podcast. If you're feeling angry, like go and do some push-ups. Punch a punching bag. Journal. Whatever. It's all energy, right? And so there's healthy ways to deal with that. There's clean ways to deal with that. And I think that being gentle with ourselves and being accepting of however we're feeling in any one time is a really powerful practice
mm-hmm.
that will lead to breakthroughs and insights and feeling good about feeling bad. That to me is a big breakthrough.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually had a psychologist tell me that. She's like, oh, well, feelings don't actually mean anything. It's kind of like when you talk about anything, like power, the internet, it's meaningless. Like it's not good or bad. It's neutral. It's a tool. You define the meaning of it. And that's the same concept with feelings or having a human experience. For instance, like with my breakup, when I podcasted about it, like most people assume breakups are bad. Breakups equal bad. Like I would tell people I had a breakup and they would immediately say, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, you're so sorry. I had the most loving, like profound experience of my life. Like I grew the most that I think I've grown in all of the years of doing everything I've been doing, you know, writing Kundalini yoga, going to Bali, having crazy spiritual awakenings. It's interesting that we just make these assumptions and then those assumptions kind of iterate how life goes for us. So thanks for like just giving another path or another option that it doesn't have to mean that. It doesn't have to equal bad.
That's true. Yeah, I think it goes back to just getting curious or asking questions. Why do I feel this way? So I'm not clear if I agree with that statement from your psychologist. I feel like feelings are hints. Or signs or
yes.
opportunities rather than just meaningless things to ignore. At least that was how I took that.
Oh, so, do you want me to explain?
Yeah, if you want.
Sure. Essentially what she told me, because my perspective was that feelings were bad because I was just wanting to show up, right? I held incredible high standards for myself. And this was while I was still in university. She's like, well, feelings aren't good and bad. They're just there. And she actually said like feelings usually... Exactly what you just said. She's like, they're an indicator of something else. And usually there's like five or six feelings stacked on top of one. Mm-hmm. And it's good to like go through those layers and see where you come out of it. So like maybe you're feeling anger and then under the anger is disappointment. Under the disappointment is actually sadness. And under the sadness is like loneliness. And then the loneliness is like, oh, I didn't get hugged as a child. And then there it is. Like there's the thing to kind of look at or heal or like change and actually talk to the therapist or the life coach about. Rather than the, oh, this is just the surface level feeling. So yeah, really similar to what you just said. It was her explanation to me. I think in my flip explanation of it, I used to just think that they were quintessentially bad or wrong. So any idea that they were something otherwise was really profound to me. Like that was an epiphany moment. Speaking of epiphanies, because you talked about them a lot, I didn't realize we were so similar. I literally, my first ever Toastmaster speech that I wrote was called "I'm an Epiphany Addict, and Here's Why." Like, I'm addicted to having epiphanies. Like, that feeling of like knowing and realizing something for the first time ever just like blows your world. Where did that start for you?
Oh God, that's a really interesting question.
What was your first epiphany?
I do have a story about this in kindergarten.
Cool.
And this guy, I don't want to use his real name, but let's call him Sonia. I remember I was in kindergarten and there was a big chain link fence with a gate leading into the school area. And outside was a big playground. My mom had dropped me off or whatever. I was just chilling in the yard, staring at stuff like I do, you know, just dorking out. And this kid, Sonia, was like holding on with his hands against the chain link fence, screaming at his mom, crying, throwing a fucking temper tantrum. Because his mom was like walking down the sidewalk. She was leaving and he was obviously not excited about that. And I remember standing there as a 6-year-old or whatever, 5-year-old, and looking at this kid and thinking, why don't you just walk out the gate? Because to his left, there was a gate. I remember thinking like, bro, well, not bro. And they're thinking, hey, yo, why don't you walk out the gate? Like, it was like this epiphany moment to me. Like, well, this is very irrational what you are doing in this moment. This does not make any sense to me. Mm. Right? Like, if you want your mom, just go and use the gate. So I don't know. That was like one of the first ones. But I've always been very in my head. So like the scientist in me is rational, analytical. Ex-girlfriends have teased me about being on the spectrum. Like, I'm not great at social cues. So all of these things, like, this is what I've been told. And like, I'm practicing. You know? And I'm really good at social cues.
Like,
yeah. So there's this, right? Of like, what I mean to say is I would often have ideas or insights of just overthinking or analyzing the world and being like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, what if we did this? What if we did this? Why don't we try this? This may be more efficient. This might be fun. So just having these like really small jolting ideas, it's just a part of who I am, I guess. It was always really scientific, analytical, good in school, like intelligent. And like, that was just how I operated, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned to, like anything, you have to, or you can channel those things and use them as tools rather than having the tools use you. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your epiphany hypothesis or whatever?
Yeah, you told me your first epiphany.
Yeah.
It's like, learn helplessness, man. Like,
bro,
step out of the cage.
What are you doing? Yeah. It's vivid to me too. Like, the visual of that, I can still see it.
Mm.
Him standing there and me just thinking, like, why are you doing that? Make no sense. Just go and get her. The gate was open. It wasn't even like, it's not a passcode or like an iris scanning thing. It was like in the 80s. It's like, just walk, like literally walk out.
Mm.
Very traumatic.
Yeah. Well, what you said there is like, it's just a natural part of how you think. It's what's always been there for you and from the analytical part of your brain. How or does that relate to the way you write poetry?
Yeah. So it's like, it's different. To simplify it or oversimplify it, you have your head and you have your heart,
mm-hmm.
right? You can do the dance between the two. And something I've been consciously playing with over the last like many years, like 5 years, whatever, is like going from my head to my heart through meditation or allowing myself to feel things or reading certain books about emotions and all of these topics. And so in terms of writing, I think there's an interplay between the emotions and the feelings that you're trying to convey through your heart and why what you're trying to express. And then for me, like the head component is about the phrase or the grammar or the word choice or how it flows and finding my own voice. And so it's like, how can I package up the heart whispers in a way that best conveys what I'm feeling, what I'm trying to express. And I think I'm really drawn to writing because I see it as like a puzzle to solve. Like editing, I love editing. Oh my God, I could dork out on this for a while actually. To start with a blank page and to finish with something that when other people read it, makes them feel something and makes them understand the experience or the idea that you are describing is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's both. We all know writers where it's all heart. You're like, holy shit, look at all these typos. You know, like, this is beautiful, but come on.
Give me a comma.
You know, I'm like, yeah, throw in a freaking period, capital I. You know what I mean? Or it's all head. The scientific writing is a perfect example of this. You read a science paper and it's emotionless, very intentionally, because that's how the foundation of science works. And so it's like a combination of those two is where my voice lies and probably where most people's voice lies.
Mm. I love it. I hear it's like a perfect power couple between the head and the heart.
Yeah.
A collab, if you will. Would you tell us the story about you doing that spoken word piece in front of that woman? So pretty much like Jeremy gave me a new standard for which to like set men apart in my world. Now that I am single and like, you know, men are available, I suppose. But there was like a different standard that was set there in terms of just the level of vulnerability, the level of effort, the level of spontaneity and heart that was present in that feat is what I'll call it. I'll call it a feat. Tell us about that story.
It was a feat. Yeah, it was definitely a feat. I wrote this poem. It's like a spoken word poem. If you don't know what spoken word poetry is, it's kind of like flows, like a sounds like a rap song in a way, like a soft rap song. Rhymes and stuff. Don't quote me on that. Jesus. So I wrote this, met this girl, wrote this thing, and then had never met her in real life. And then I've never told this story actually in public.
Yes.
Yeah. So she picked me up. She came to town. I was visiting and picked me up on the street corner. We went for a hike.
She picked you up on the
street corner? Yeah, like in a car.
You guys had arranged this.
Though. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I wasn't just prostituting. Like, hey, oh, I know you.
No, let's go hiking.
Let's go
to Vancouver.
Yeah. So we went for a hike. And then I had arranged for a friend of mine who's a videographer, hired this guy to have a studio. And I told her ahead of time, like, I sent her this very awkward text, which I only realized it was awkward after the fact. But just a heads up, don't do this to women. The text was, without any context, because I was really excited about this idea. You're laughing.
This so great.
So I was like, hey, how comfortable are you in front of a camera? To her credit, she wrote back, like, I'd say pretty comfortable. That's like a bit random though, you know? I was like, oh, dang, I should explain the thing. So anyway, we did a hike, went to the studio. I'd only known her in real life for like 2 hours. And then stood like a foot apart, looked into her eyes, and then delivered this like 1 minute talk, 1 minute poem. And the first line is, I swear I'm not like other guys, but I do want to know what your lips taste like. And it like went on from there. And then we filmed it, and you can watch the thing on my Instagram and elsewhere. But through the video, if you watch her specifically, she's kind of like light and fuzzy at first. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then she drops into like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Because it's real. It's like real art. And for me was the whole vision. And we even talked about that on the way there. Like, hey, I only get one take at this because if I do it again, then you'll know what's happening and your expression is not going to mirror the words that you're hearing. So that was like a real and raw moment. And that was like the first time I expressed any of that. And it's cool. It's like such a cool little video. And that to me is a really good expression of what I think art could be, which is just to convey feelings and intensity and heart. And like, you can't watch that, I think, and like not feel something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the whole point of art.
Heck yeah. That just blew me away. What did I even say? I sent you all the DMs.
Yeah, I got a lot of DMs. A lot of women are like, well, all right, I'm dead. Like, well,
game over.
Yeah.
Spoken word in front of a camera after a hike. I mean, it's like the bar, like just above that would have to be like song that you play at like your first show and your my hometown. Not giving any hints here, but oh, I'm going to have to decide if I want to cut that out. Anyway, so where are we now? Like, we've talked about romance, art, expression, coaching, science,
masculinity.
Like masculinity, that you can change your mind, you can live on the edge. Like, what else is there for you to express? What's on your heart? Put it on the soapbox.
Oh, gosh. Currently, and I think this is an ongoing thing for me and probably for most people, it's just dealing with uncertainty about the future and accepting that I'll be okay and trusting that it always works out in whatever way it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
That meme about the universe working for you and through you, right, at all times. So for me, like, I don't know where I'm going to live in a month, and I don't have really concrete plans for next year. And that's really exciting. And the other side of that is potentially scary or uncertain. So just playing around with that, like, where I want to go, what do I want to do? And I think it's also partially like the end of the year, so I have some space and time to reflect on what just happened and what I want the next year to be about. So that's something that I've been experimenting with and playing with. And then in terms of like project stuff, launching a couple online things. And one of my heart whispers, though, is like to do a one-man show for like 60 minutes, like on a stage in a theater.
Yes.
As like a 60-minute spoken word thing.
Mm.
And it's so terrifying to me. I can't even tell you. But it keeps coming up. And I'm like, no, we can't do that. We've never done that. We're not an actor. And I'm like, every day, hey, write that. Why don't you start the, So I started writing it. And
wow. So
that's like a big project that I'm kind of like playing with a little bit.
Is there anything specifically that you want to promote right now? Like in terms of your programming that's coming out, especially like in the new year? For people that have done the evaluation and want to plan out their year or want to see what you're all about. I mean, following you on Instagram, you're going to share all of it. And I'll put everything in the show notes around how to connect with you.
Yeah, so I'm doing a retreat in April in Flagstaff. That's going to be ridiculous. We rented a big mansion. Me and my buddy Trey Verbohm, who's a men's coach and amazing human. I've got that. And then I'm thinking I'm going to do a six-month group coaching mastermind thing, where every week we'll have a 60-minute call that I'll lead or facilitate for 6 months. I love this idea of creating a little virtual family,
mm-hmm.
being like, yo, let's shake some shit up in the first 6 months of 2019 and see what's possible, and creating that little supportive system with like accountability. So I'm going to be doing that. That's something cool. And then I've got online programs too. I have like Get Shit Done 101 is a self-study program that you can do by yourself. It's all about how to start rituals and be productive and punch procrastination in the face and create the environment you need to get your shit done. That's really good. It's such, like, obviously I wrote it, but like, it's really good. I'm really proud of it.
It's a great workshop.
It's really good. And, you know, everybody says that about their stuff, but it really is good. So you can do that. And then, yeah, just find me on Instagram. I have a book.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I don't know. I feel like I should have a more streamlined answer of, hey, buy my shit. But I don't know. Like, if this resonated, find me online, shoot me a message. Longdistancelovebombs.com or just Instagram at longdistancelovebombs. It's the easiest way.
Will you end by telling us the start of Long Distance Love Bombs? What was that? How did the name come about? It's an awesome story.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So also, you just reminded me, I gave a TED Talk called What If Kindness Is Cool? That it has the same story in it. I always forget that I give a TED Talk. It's so fucking weird.
That's kind of hilarious.
It's like
me.
A dream.
It's a little bit.
It's a dream,
like,
for the biggest time.
I roll.
And then,
yeah.
I get these messages. Like, I watched your TED Talk. It was amazing. I was like, oh, yeah. Give a TED Talk. It's crazy.
Right.
So anyway.
You live on the edge. And then sometimes it produces epic results.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, oh, shit. Yeah, that happens. So years ago, I just started writing and sharing and doing my thing. And I was in an airport and I was waiting for my flight to board. And I looked over and I saw this woman that was on the telephone, and she was alone and she was just sobbing and she was crying really hard. And then she hung up the phone and she just sat there sobbing. And she was alone. She was crying. And I was just watching her thinking, ugh, like, that poor woman is really having a hard time. And then I looked around and she was surrounded by a crowd of people on their phones, and she was just isolated amidst all of that humanity sobbing. And I wanted to do something and I was really nervous. I didn't know what to do. And my flight was boarding and all that. So I took a business card out of my wallet and I wrote, "It'll be okay and you will be too," which is now the title of the book. And I walked over and I handed her the card and I gave her a little like pat on the back. And I noticed like, that was it. I didn't say anything. We made eye contact and I turned and left and then boarded the flight. And that was that. And then on the flight, I started thinking about what a kindness revolution might look like and what it would look like if compassion was commonplace and if people gave selflessly and if we were kind to each other, and just what bullshit I thought it was that a woman can just sit and cry by herself and not have anybody see if she's okay or hug her or ask if they can support her. So that's kind of how I started writing more about the compassion and kindness stuff. And now it's more transitioned to like personal development, how your beliefs work, how you can live the best life, more coaching stuff. But I started by doing more purely encouraging and inspirational stuff, which is what the book is mainly about. It's like mantras to keep you going, get you out of bed, put a smile on your face. And the book, it's like ripped out pages. So you can tear them out, share them, frame them, whatever. Trying to make the world better than yesterday is the idea. However I can do that. That to me is like success.
I love it. You do make kindness cool. You're cool and you're kind, and it's just perfect. You just embody. Like, I mean, your brand is you. You're your brand. Like,
yeah, well, you know what's so interesting about that is I realized after doing this for a while, because I was like, oh, my brand's about kindness. And like, I'm like the kindness guy. And like, I had to become way kinder. Like, yeah. I could not be a sarcastic asshole. Not that I was, but, you know, certainly parts of me. And I realized how when I became a brand, or I started treating myself as a brand, then I raised my standards for myself and my integrity and all of that. And that was all a byproduct of just starting a business where I was the only employee. That was kind of cool.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Mandy Bollock, who I have to get on the podcast. She's like a big female entrepreneur in Calgary. She does ACE Talks, which is all about female entrepreneurs, female empowerment, like female voices. And she talks about like being your brand, like you are your brand and becoming it, and how it does raise your standards. And it makes you take a look the same way you would if you were, you know, representing Apple. Like, you might actually act differently or take on different aspects. And the same, it's just more interesting when it's your own personal brand, because it feels like it's like your own personal fullest expression and evolution. So that's really powerful. So I think with that and with everything, like, this is what we have to leave people with. And what I'm really curious about most is you, the listener, what's still sticking in your mind? Like, what is the phrase or the idea from this podcast that's like playing on repeat in your mind? Would you share it with me and Jeremy on Instagram? Like, tell us what was most poignant for you, what sticks out, what smells good from this podcast for you. And maybe what you're going to do about it. Are you going to take some action? Do you need to create a ritual around it? You can reach out to Jerry. You can reach out to me. Reach out to whoever else can hold you accountable to creating that, or just put it in your phone and start doing it. I really, really hope this podcast served you, inspired you, gave you what you needed, made you laugh. Whatever you needed, I hope you got it. I'm sending you so much love. Thank you so much, Jeremy. This was so much fun. Thank you for the tea and for the laughs and for the weird mug. We didn't talk about the weird mug. It's fabulous. I'll take a picture. I'm sending you all so much love. I hope you feel loved today. Sat Nam.